The title of this morning's address is Theodore. It's about Theodore Parker. The Transcendental Club was a group of authors, philosophers, socialists, and intellectuals. It was formed in the early part of the 19th century. Members gather to discuss religion, philosophy, politics, education, and other relevant subjects. Its founders and many of its members were Unitarian ministers based in the Boston area. And Theodore Parker was a Unitarian minister and a founding member of that Transcendental Club. He was a social activist, author, abolitionist, and supported votes for women. And at a time when education was reserved for the privileged wealthy, he advocated universal education. The 163rd anniversary of his death was last Wednesday. He died on the 10th of May, 1860. He is esteemed by Unitarians. And when I read about him, I find it interesting that the religious questions he grappled with still resonate within Unitarianism today. It's amazing how these things still call us to question. Parker was the son of one of the founding fathers of America. His father, John, was leader of the Lexington militia who fought at the Battle of Lexington. But despite his illustrious ancestry, Parker's childhood was absolutely steeped in poverty. Tuberculosis had ravaged the family. His mother died from it when he was 12 years old. And by the time he was 27, both parents and seven of his siblings had died from TB. And it's interesting that the death of so many family members gave Parker an unshakable belief in the immortality of the soul. He had an absolute unshakable belief that they were going to be somewhere where they were happy now. Aged 19, he walked 10 miles to apply to become a student at Harvard College. And he was accepted as a student, but as he didn't have the money for the fees, he couldn't attend the college. So while still working the family farm, he studied at home in the evenings and only went to college to sit his exams. Make a bit green here with envy. He completed the 3-year course in 1 year. He went to become fluent in Latin, Greek, Hebrew, and German. And he had a good understanding of Chaldee, Syriac, Arabic, Coptic, and Ethiopic. He did consider a career in law, but that faith in the human souls and its immortality drew him to ministry. We're all aware of Martin Luther King's famous quotes. One of them, he said, "I know we will overcome because," he said, "the moral arc of the universe is long, but it bends towards justice." When King said that, he was quoting Theodore Parker. When the freed African-American slave Frederick Douglass went to visit Italy, he went to Florence, and he went directly from the train station to visit Theodore Parker's grave, where he's buried in Florence. It's amazing how influential he was. In those early years of the 19th century, many of the Christian churches in the Boston area were in the Calvinist tradition. And that Calvinism had its origins in Scots and Scots-Irish immigrants to the east coast of America. Ministers such as Parker, Ralph Waldo Emerson, and Channing came to question this dour interpretation of the Christian faith. Parker said that this Calvinist form of Christianity, their cry ever was, "Duty, duty, work, work." They fail, he said, to address the equal power of the soul and did not shout out, joy, joy, delight, delight. There's something very uplifting in seeing religion, not in work, work, duty, duty, but that real religion, when we're really in tune with ourselves, we're joyful, we're not miserable. And this is what these transcendentalists questioned. But of course, in the case of any inherited faith, when a question arises about one aspect, inevitably it will call other parts of that faith into question. As the Transcendental Club members shared in the academic study of the Bible and they read translations of Hindu and Buddhist scriptures, this question of faith led many ministers to become disillusioned and quit their posts. And I think that's still a relevant question for us today. Are we confined to just one type of religion? Are we right when we read from other sources and non-religious readings as well? And I don't think we can stop doing it if we find it useful. But there are churches who would see us as wolves in sheep's clothing because we don't stick rigidly to Old Testament readings and New Testament readings. In Parker's case, he came to see the Bible as a good ethical guide, but it wasn't a theological discourse about the nature of divinity. And Parker identified four markers to use when reading the Bible. He said, firstly, use your reason when you read it. Use your reason. Second, read it with an awareness of its antiquity. Remember, it's thousands of years old. Those people lived in a different world than we were. Thirdly, remember the Bible is a library. It has many different authors. And fourthly, the reader should have a feeling of sympathy for the nature of the work. By that he means to remember the people who wrote that, they were of their time. They weren't foolish or ignorant. They were of their time. Parker was accused of not being a Christian. And of course, that's another question that's still relevant for us. Which is more important, what we believe or profess to believe, or how we believe, about how we behave, what our actions are? This church has its roots in the Christian faith. Look at all the symbolism within the building. But does our refusal to accept creeds exclude us from the Christian family? Parker and the Transcendentalists found a deep connection with God in the world of nature. And I think many of us do too, that you might find God far quicker in the world of nature than you will in reading parts of the Old Testament. Emerson said of nature that standing on the bare ground, the currents of the universal being circulate through me. I am part and parcel of God. That is what he felt when he was in the world of nature. Parker wrote, "Nature is man's religious book with lessons for every day." Nature is man's religious book with lessons for every day. And there's real truth in that. Another important question they addressed was that of religious authority. Is the Bible the ultimate source of religious authority? Does religious authority reside with religious leaders? Or is it the individual conscience? Parker was unequivocal that the individual conscience is the ultimate source of authority. In fact, the use of conscience in religious discernment is our duty to God. It is our God-given gift. We cannot divorce ourselves from it. Parker wrote, "Never violate the sacredness of your individual self-respect. Be true to your own mind and conscience, your heart and your soul, and so only can you be true to God." Many Christian denominations would insist that you find it in authority in religious leaders. Parker was a passionate social activist. His activism and modernism, sometimes extreme views, became too liberal even for the liberals of Boston. Such a liberal area, they thought he'd gone a step too far. Because Parker wrote of democracy, "Democracy does not mean I am as good as you, but you are as good as I am." I often think when we think of equality, we think, well, I'm as good as anybody else, rather than putting other people and saying, everyone is equal to me. He called slavery a politically sanctioned crime. He harbored runaway slaves in his home, and he ran an escape route for runaway slaves to escape to Canada. And to protect the slaves in his congregation, he carried a loaded pistol in the pulpit to protect them from slave hunters. He supported John Brown's attack on the Harper Ferry terminal. And many Bostonians were against slavery. However, Parker said that slaves would be justified in killing their owners. And it's the things like that that it was felt he went a step too far for the liberals. And he personally financed armed militias in the freed states. Eventually, many of the ministers in Boston wouldn't allow Parker to preach in their pulpits. And as the church was very small, the congregation hired a local hall for him to speak in. He outgrew the church. In 1846, 1,000 people attended every Sunday. By 1852, that number had increased to 2,000. Abolitionism was only part of Parker's social activity. Reliance on the use of conscience in religion requires that conscience is informed. So Parker believed and agitated that education should not be for the privileged rich. It should be for everyone. Every person, men and women, should be educated. And this is pre-1850. He protested the American war. He attacked urban poverty and argued for a penal system that was aimed at reforming the offender. And he railed against people who called themselves Christian but kept their wealth intact. He advocated not just votes for women, but equality between men and women. And this is what he said about women. He said, "To make one half of the human race consume its energy in the function of housekeeper, wife and mother is a monstrous waste of the most precious material God ever made." I like that. There's another point on which Parker disagreed with liberal Unitarian ministers, one that is still relevant. Parker felt that liberal ministers did not put enough emphasis on what he called the simple religious feeling. Despite being a passionate activist, Parker knew that the soul must be tended to. He believed that the liberals' emphasis on reason and activism was at the expense of looking after the soul and communicating Parker's joyful message of religion and life being good and having meaning. Our congregation here has an association with the General Assembly of Unitarian and Free Christian Churches, which is based in the UK. However, many members of the UK churches now shorten the title to the movement. They call it the movement. They have changed from being a church to being a movement. This change is reflected in the content of the Inquirer magazine and the other social media platforms that the General Assembly use. Now, we do have a duty to contribute to the betterment of society. But if we just forget about looking after the soul, then we are just political activists or social activists. I believe that in the United Kingdom, the balance has swung too far in favour of activism at the expense of caring for the soul. It is right that we work for charities, for inclusion, that we march for the rights of minorities. But a church's first care is for the individual soul. And when I speak of care of the soul, I don't mean worship of some remote deity or a discussion about points of theology. By care of the soul, I mean that we recognize that we need to set time aside throughout our lives, daily, weekly, whenever, but regularly, to return to the best that is in our human nature, to find our true selves and find the divinity within ourselves and nourish our souls. And if we do that, the rest of the activism will fall into place. We won't be hung up on it. Social achievement or work promotions or things like that, we will realize that we are all simply sharing the earth for a limited time here together. We need to think about why we're here and make the best use of that time. And as a church, we too need to remember that religion is not a duty. Duty, duty, work, work. When we care for the soul, we might actually find ourselves feeling and saying, joy, joy, delight, delight. Amen.